The boys go on the road this week. What does it look like from the strength conditioning perspective with the coaches loading up all the equipment and going on a road trip? We also discuss the Hawkeye Championship and the differences between 2014 and 2015, what led to that success in the 2015 year. And then we discuss primers and pregame warmups. Coach didn't like pregame warmup last week. What's wrong with the current format? Let's have a day. Let's go. Sit here and talk about Nick DeMarco. Welcome into the 5-10-5 show, everybody. Coach and I are just here talking about my overhead squat that's better than everybody listening. Sorry, not sorry.
It's true.
Do you have anything like that?
No.
Personally, like a weight room?
My thing is I'm just like the weight room grinder. I'm not great at anything, but like I'll grind anything out with that 100-pound tire. Like DeMarco and I flipped it 100 yards. Nobody else on staff could do it. Like Joel is stronger than me in the weight room. Couldn't flip it. Cody could deadlift maybe one or two, like could lift in the weight room better than me. Yeah. Couldn't flip the tire. I can just grind and get after it.
Grunt work guy.
That's me. Glue guy. I'll never forget this. Jim, you remember Jim Reed, the linebacker?
Of course.
All right. So
Justin Lieber
on Fridays, we used to do power development work before whether we were traveling or whether we were on the road. And so once we were done doing the GPP for the guys that didn't train, we would do power development work. So jammers, jumps, whatever.
You guys as in the staff.
DeMarco, Cody, myself.
Yeah.
Joel never partook. Anyways, Jim's like watching us train. He's like, what's Justin doing? They're like, guys, you know, work. Like this is up at breakfast. Like he's getting better at that. He's like, I don't know if he should keep doing that. You know what? Screw you, Jim. Like you're waddling out to practice. Like, man, I'm still getting after it, bro.
Guy's 68 years old and he's questioning the 30 something.
So that's my little point of contention.
So you guys specifically would just roll in and do power work, and Joel wasn't about it, huh?
Joel was he was on his powerlifting gig. He was, if it wasn't squat, bench, or deadlift, he really didn't have much else.
He's a bigger, faster, stronger guy.
Yeah, that was his thing.
Is he still that kind of guy?
I don't know. I think
so. Have you talked to him much?
I saw him at the CSCCA, so what are we, September? That was May, 4 months ago.
Still same old Joel.
Yeah.
He's still at CMU?
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of Joel in that like 2005, remember the old trophy cases? Because we have Minnesota this week, right?
Yes, we do.
So remember the old trophy cases where it was the clear case that would go on top of the black? Yep. All right. Mm-hmm. Remember how it was broken?
Yeah.
I was the one that got to break it.
Got to break it.
So remember 14, we lost all the trophy games.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay.
Yeah. It was so, not good.
We didn't have, like, right now, you know that the trophy, if we win it, is in the weight room for everybody to see. Well, yeah. 15, we didn't have trophies to display.
Right.
So instead of, like, I think we had an empty trophy case, and, like, we would just
put it.
And then it was one time, I forget who it was. It was either Doyle or somebody, maybe Nick, Joel was like, we should break the thing. It's like, yeah, we should. And like, I was the one, I was like, I'll fucking do it. So I grabbed the sledgehammer and just smashed it. It was,
okay.
And that's where we put the pieces on it. And it was
It's vaguely coming back to me that we walked in and there was a busted trophy case and everyone was just kind of like.
Because we were like, we're sick of the fact that we didn't win any of the trophies. And that's why on our 15 Rose Bowl ring, it's got all four trophies. Like we made it a point of like, you got to win these games.
I think I don't have it.
I got mine right over here.
I think it's sitting in my parents' basement, actually, up in Ankeny. Shout out to the Ankeny Hawks, by the way. Any local Iowa listeners took down Dowling Catholic.
Big one here in Centennial for your cousin, too, this week. Southeast Polk coming into town.
Yeah.
Homecoming.
Centennial's 3-0. Ankeny football, man.
Ankeny football.
Tell you what. That 2015 team was so. We've got a topic today. As Coach mentioned, we do have Minnesota, and I want to talk about. We'll get there. I want to talk about going on the road, what that looks like, because I feel like the strength staff is really important to the road routine, not only with just everything. We'll get into it. But yeah, 2015 was an interesting year. I think a lot of factors went into us doing so well that year. It blows my mind. You even think about a game like Iowa State that we just lost. Like, this team currently, there's more talent on this current team than we had in 2015. Is 2015 the least talented team on paper? Like, one for one individually in the entire KF era? Maybe. I don't know. We had one guy get drafted. Blythe got drafted, almost was Mr. Irrelevant in the 2016 draft. Without him, we lose our streak. We've had a guy drafted in the NFL for like every year of KF's tenure or something. But and I don't know, you'd have to go back and look at the starters on that roster, how many actually ended up playing or making a roster in the league. It's not nearly as many as like the 2009 team or the 2002, 3, 4 teams that also had similar success. But that empty trophy case thing and the slight edge and maybe a few other factors that don't really pop out in my mind, but were just small things. There was just a lot going for us that year. Like, we basically, I think everybody felt like we're all in, and the players can't get fired, although I think we're moving closer to that kind of situation with NIL. Coaches can get fired. And I think maybe everybody in the building was just feeling it. They're like, holy shit, we got to win games. We have to win. We can't lose. And I don't know. You got it. It felt like the Hawkeye Championship, we just bought in so much. And I don't know if you guys made that. It was always such a big part of the offseason that year or every year. But that year, it just felt like.
Was that the first year that y'all dressed up as captains?
Could have been. Yeah, I know the year previous. Obviously, I didn't participate in the offseason of 2013 because we got there in
summer.
Camp, right? So I wasn't a part of that offseason. 2014 would have been my first draft, right? This was a big deal. For anybody listening, you've heard
the Hawkeye Championship can be its own thing, let alone like, and that was my baby for the entire time at Iowa. Like, so that could be.
Yeah, its own. you were on the
that was my thing.
You were the Excel guy up there on the thing, making sure every player's name. Holy smokes. You were.
Yeah.
Like,
so Doyle was the one walking around taking the picks, but I was the one that was actually like, so I had to make sure that
you were,
I
mean,
the names were like all the things that got printed off or updating those boards. That was my, like that, to be on point.
Okay. We'll make that an entire episode. Anyway, we've talked about we've sort of mentioned this offseason competition where the team splits up into mini teams. And we sat there in the indoor.
Yep.
Is where we did the 2014 one. Before we did it in the All-American room the last 3 years of my career. And there was a bunch of chairs, and the tables were up front or around the edge, and the captains that were voted on. And I just remember, like, thinking back, it was one of those moments where you're like, yeah, I knew this was going to go poorly.
Were you one of the last people sitting there?
I was the fourth to last pick. I was the fourth to last pick, and deservedly so. Deservedly so. There's always points that are brought into the competition, right? Yep. You remember that? So, I mean, obviously.
Course I do, because I had to make sure it was right. It had to be next to your name. If you were in the red, you had the red in the numbers.
Sure. So, you know, like, you couldn't get many points for, but you could get points against up to that point where we would draft, right? So, you know, you come back from break and you did something citizenship wise that wasn't good, or you know, the grades come through on that last semester and that counts for points against the next, you know, the next to start the next year, or you know, the draft wasn't immediately the first day, so it was like 10 days into the second semester, so you've had 10 days worth of like absences at your new classes, or you messed up something in the weight room, or you missed a body weight already, whatever. And I was the fourth to last pick, and it was a humbling. That might have been the start of my ascendance.
Figure it out.
Because if you've ever been picked last on the playground for dodgeball or for kickball, I think you either go one way. It either pisses you off and you're embarrassed, or you just become not a sports guy, right? You're just like, ah, it's okay. Like, I'll I'll be in the band. Nothing against the band. But like, you know, you get picked. And that was, you know, there's 115, 17 guys on the team, and I'm picked fourth to last. That's tough, man. And that fired me up, and I probably started to be a better teammate and Division I athlete, student athlete at that point. But I just remember the first picks from the captains, and there was a lot of, first of all, the captains, there was a couple good ones, it's a couple bad ones, and not bad people, but bad captains. And then the first picks were like friendship picks, you know? It was like the captain picked their boy. It's like, but your boy's got negative 800 points already. So why is he the second? Why is he the first pick, right? So it just, there was some signs. And then everything flipped on its head in 2015. It was like Drew Ott and Blythe and Marshall Kane and that class just, they almost made that offseason competition more important than, you know, how we viewed the upcoming season. It was like, this is what we care about. This is what's going to make us better. And then it just bled into that. All of that's a rant to say, like, it's so hard to win football games. We won 12 in a row that year, and we were much less talented. We didn't have some of the defensive players that we had this year. We probably had a better offensive line, but.
Yeah, I'm biased. I don't know. There was 15 guys that wound up making an NFL roster between Desmond, Kittle.
Was there really?
Desmond, Kittle, Beathard, Josie, Neiman, Gervais, Ike, Mabin, Jaleel, Blythe, Tavon, had a cup of coffee, OJ, Josh, James Daniels, Anthony Nelson, like pretty good on paper.
And James was in there.
In hindsight, but that was James's freshman year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is crazy to go back and look at starting rosters, because in the moment you're always like, gosh, we could use more, you know, we could always. And then you go back and you're like, okay, 70% of these guys like started an NFL game. You're like, Jesus Christ. Anyway, 10 minutes into the podcast and talked about nothing. We go on the road this week. Justin, what does that look like from a strength perspective? You guys have to pack up. You've got gear that you've got to, you know, we do an entire warm-up on the field that requires rollers and bands and hurdles and all this stuff. What's the philosophy from the strength and conditioning perspective of what we have to get done on the road and what that requires, but also what does that entail as far as you guys responsibility-wise packing up the truck or making sure that's, you know, stuff like that?
So we'd always make sure Thursdays the trailer would leave, like you guys have to pack your stuff up, and we would do the same. So we'd make sure that all of the equipment for that pregame, we called it a primer, get your nervous system primed, and we would make sure hurdles, med balls, mini bands, foam rollers, stretch bands, any of the things that we're putting in the locker room, we're getting that packed on the trailer to go down to the locker room. We would have one of those power plates go too. So a power plate is a high frequency vibration unit where the players could sit on it, stand on it, and it would help their muscles relax so they could stretch better, is the easiest way to explain it. We would pack all of that on Thursday. We had our checklist to make sure that we did not forget anything. We'd also make sure that we packed bikes for the guys, so that way in between drives, wherever, if they wanted to get a little bit of work for their legs, they could. Then we would also make sure that we packed bars and shakes and Gatorades, so that way all the fluids and food that you guys are used to having before game, that needs to be there. We also made a drink. I don't know if they still have it, but like the drink after the primer, where it was a ton of essentially simple carbohydrates, so you guys would have more energy to do the work that you need to do over time. We would also pack electrolytes to have Friday night or Saturday morning at the pregame meal, which, you know, giving you guys options of having the things so you could have all the comforts of home on the road. That was the biggest thing.
Little Powerade boost.
Little boost.
Dude, a boost.
Oh my gosh. Joel, Cody, and I probably still have like nightmares from the Tax Slayer Bowl when we had like, we didn't have the total number that we were supposed to have. We still had enough, but it was like, we didn't run out, but like, it was like, oh, are we going to run out?
Nutrition stuff?
No, of just the Gator of the packets. And like, we had enough, we didn't run out, but it was one of those, like, I just so hope that like if 10 more people want to go get one, like this is getting tight. Like, please. please just be hydrated. Don't go looking for more.
I used to, for the listeners, we would arrive at the hotel, and this was Kirkwood or on the road. And I guess,
we'd get there early is what he's trying to get to.
Yeah. Did the managers it would have been the managers sort of had to know what you guys all were bringing too, so that they could set that out, because you guys would arrive with us, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So the managers and us, I mean, we're communicating literally every day, and more than half of them would actually come in and train in the weight room. So like we'd talk with them at practice. We'd talk with them in the weight room. We had great relationships with them, whether it was Bomber or any of the other senior managers of them. But we'd help them pack the truck, be like, hey, here's our stuff. You know, please just put this in the locker room. And then what would happen is, so we would go to the hotel, and in the hotel, like, you guys are really more just relaxing by the time you get there. You guys are already going to be on your feet and moving around with meetings, so we don't really need to mobilize you anything that day. But we would just tell them, hey, this equipment, put it on the field. We will set the hurdles where we want them. Yep. Once we get to the field, hey, put the whatever, put it here. We personally would travel with like the electrolytes. We would travel with the GPS.
Oh, okay.
The nutrition bars, they would just put it into the weight room. And then after a while, they started to see like, hey, this is what the strength staff does. Okay, we can put these things out. But also, the minute we would show up with you guys, that's when we would, you know, detail it and make sure it was nice, okay, or whatever.
Yeah, because it was always, you know, we would get to Kirkwood and there's like a table, it's like a buffet. It's like a nutrition, like athlete buffet. You've got protein cookies and the chews the gels and the bars and Powerade, whatever you want.
The same stuff that we'd have at home. We wanted you guys just to have it be the exact same, and we try to get to the hotel early too, so that way you guys could just start to diet, like get away from the noise, get away from the distractions. And part of that happened was in 14, we played a little bit better on the road, I think. And it was like, hey, okay, we're away from distractions sooner, because in 14, I think we used to do like that walkthrough, because it used to be the walkthrough before the, you know, Fast Friday.
Yeah.
And it was be at like 2:30 or 3:00. And we're like, all right, we're just kind of lingering on a Friday versus like, hey, let's just get to the point. It's a road game or home game. Get to the hotel, dial in, be with your teammates, get ready for this game.
Fast Friday is so much better in the morning, like right away. Fast Friday.
Because we do that primer in the weight room too that day.
Yeah. So, So if you get to the stadium really early, you'll kind of see on a game day, the guys do like a primer. You'd have to be there in there like real early. We do that on a Friday as well, Friday morning. And the primer consisted of like quite literally like maybe 4 to 5 minutes in the weight room doing like a couple really explosive things, and then like a 25, 28 minute clock of walkthrough where everything is it's fast. It is called Fast Friday for a reason. Everybody was locked into the routine, the script, and you don't mess something up on Fast Friday or else everybody feels like shit. Can you explain primer and the concept?
So the concept was originated from, whether it was strength and conditioning coach at Oregon, Jim Radcliffe, or track strength coach Charlie Francis with his athletes that were, you know, setting world records back in the day. Anyways, the whole point of it is getting your nervous system primed, right? Like ready for activity. So Thursdays, the players would be off. Wednesdays, they were off the field by 10:30 or 11. So by the time they'd come into the facility and train again, it'd be about 8:30 on Friday. So you're looking at about 48 hours of inactivity, which was exactly what we wanted for them to recover. But we wanted to get their nervous system primed for fast activity the day before big activity, because that's what Coach Radcliffe would do. That's what Coach Francis would do. And so we had this hypothesis that we had tested in 14 and then fully implemented in 15. And so it would start off with just some simple, easy, what we called a core roll. So roll out your glutes, your back, your groin, your quads, hamstrings. Then you go do some mobility drills. After the mobility drills, this was the rolling and mobility was done on the field. Go into the weight room, you'd hit an Olympic lift, whether it was a clean and jerk or a snatch, really, really fast movements, might even be a jammer. From there, you would go and throw some med balls, done. Like Kluve said, very fast, very violent. And now your body, your nervous system, you're sending the signal from your brain to your muscles to contract, because that's what happens when you do anything. It's either you think about it or it just goes from your spinal column as a reflex. So we're training the guys to be thinking fast, moving fast. They go put their cleats on, they go put their spider pads and helmet on, and then they go out to practice. And now you're executing plays, short volume, high speed, because your body can recover from that easier than the volume the day before the game. Get everything done, like Kluve said, quick 28 minutes on the clock. Then truly do walk through of situational special teams. Let the players get a meal. Let them recover again, because now they just, hey, they got their body moving again. Now recover the body and then get the body moving again on Saturday.
Perfect. It's like a warm-up to the warm-up. And I still use a primer in its own way in my training, like today. For like a piece that I'm going to, like a competitive piece, if it's something where I'm like in a competition or it's whatever, I will do like I'll still like warm up my core temp with like 12 to 15 minutes just spinning the legs on a bike and get a little sweat going. And then I'll let the heart rate come down off of that for like 3 minutes. And then I'll do like I hate to bring in the CrossFit terms, but I'm going to the WOD specific primer. So if it's going to be like wall balls and a dumbbell snatch and some pull-ups, I'll do like a couple really fast explosive movements of each to get the heart rate up, like another 1 minute quick, like if it's an 8-round workout, one round basically. And then I'll let the body come back down off of that. I still use the primer to this day. And I'm sure like you roll jiu-jitsu and you still, actually would love to know what your lifting looks like nowadays for yourself personally, but I'm sure you kind of similarly do primer-ish stuff too. I always get made fun of in the CrossFit gym that I go to because my warm-up is so long, but I think it really helps. I think it decreases injuries. There's probably some science data on that. And it always felt good and it works. So I love it. I would like to get into this. On the day of, there's that primer right when they get to the stadium. They basically get dressed, go out, prime. Then they have that entire warm-up that they do up until like 20 minutes left on the clock and they go back into the locker room.
Hate that. Ugh.
And I think I saw you or DeMarco or somebody on Twitter like in the last couple of weeks say, I think it was DeMarco. He's like, he was talking to some other strength coach. He's like, don't forget about that, the game they play before the game or something. What? Why are they out there so long? What are we doing?
Anxiety. Coach anxiety, I think. I mean, Rob Ambrose was the head football coach that I worked for at Towson. We were this close to getting rid of that, and then COVID happened. So we were at Florida.
And so strength coaches have to fight this everywhere.
Yes. Unless you have a head coach that gets it. Like I said, Rob didn't want, like, it wasn't necessary at the time. We were moving in that direction of getting rid of it because, like you said, if you mess up a play on Friday, now everybody thinks, oh, you don't know what's going on. No athlete is like, oh yeah, I need to go run 23B again pregame to know how to run it. Like Brady Ross knows what he's doing. Like any of those guys know what they're doing. And we played Florida in the swamp in 19. And obviously Florida had more money than us, but what they would do is they would go out during that warm-up time and the players were in what essentially happens now, where they're wearing their uniform short sleeve hoodies with their number on it and their uniform colors. And they look nice. And they go through that whole show and dance with no pads on.
They look good. Okay. They fucking look like Penn State already.
You sounded just like him, but that's the point. Like go and do whatever, like move your body there, go put your pads on, then go back out and play, because you get to the point where you're starting to do too much. Like you talk about that or at a powerlifting meet that I've done before, you get all amped up for squat. We have to come back down and then get ready for bench and then come back down and get ready for like, it starts to get exhausting. And so that's where, if you could cut that out, that served the athletes well.
It's definitely necessary to warm up even past the primer, but I always thought of it this way. And like, it was a little bit different for specialists because it was such an up and down, like, okay, you have to be ready to go fully loose, warm, ready to perform your rep. And then you sit for 15 or 20 minutes, maybe longer. I think there was a half or two in the 50 some games that I played where I did not snap a football. Like, it just so happened that, like, we had long drives, but we would sputter out and then we'd go for it on fourth down. So we weren't actually plus 50 punting either. We never kicked a field goal. I might have had one rep or something and a half. And so a game rep was 30, 40 minutes in between. But offensive or defensive players, like, you're going through 12, 15 minute stretches where you might be of real time, where you might not be on the field, and you're up and down like that for 3 hours, maybe 2.5 hours with a big break in the middle. It's just a lot of nervous system ups and downs. And I always sat there and I thought, so why is there a 90 minute warm up before this? We're just making it even worse. We're extending that out to 4+ hours of total. It's so hard to be turned on for 4 hours.
It's very hard. And that's why it needs to eventually evolve to get rid of it. Yes.
It has to. What would be ideal in your mind? Like, what were you going at Towson before COVID hit? Ugh. What were you going to move it to? What was going to be your ideal is it 50 minutes?
You go out in those same waves, but you go out, you do the, so the reason we were doing the primer is because guys were going to go and do their own routes anyway. So we're like, let's make sure that they're warmed up before they go and do that. So we're doing our due diligence.
Right.
So you'd start by educating the guys like, hey, you like walk around, move, sure, do whatever, see the facility, but don't run because of all the work you're going to do. Then you do the primer with them. They come out in their same waves, but they're wearing t-shirt shorts. Let them get taped, whatever they're going to do. Come out, do their primer. Then they go and do all of that work that they would do with their coaches to get warmed up, put their pads on. Like, you go back in at that 22 minute mark, put their pads on. Then coach comes in. Hey, all right, guys, let's go out there and get them. You go out there. Done. Now you're not wasting the time. And it is very similar. Like you said, there were times if the defense is on the field, offense ain't out there for 12 minutes, 15 minutes of real time.
Man, it just seemed like you're already asking these guys to go through an incredible amount of physical exhaustion over the course of 2-3 hours. And then the specialists, we would be the first ones out there for the official warm-up, first ones in pads out on the field.
Yep.
And on the game clock, I think we left the locker room at 82 minutes on the pregame clock, on the countdown clock. And there was always one in the locker room, so it matched the one in the stadium. And it's like, bro, we don't play for an hour and a half. I could sit on the couch and watch the entire second half of a game before we even kick this thing off. And then we're here for another 3 hours. Like, this is a marathon. And especially for us, it's like, why are we sending the specialists out in their full pads an hour and a half before we get to? I mean, it's just so stupid.
Because then you guys used to talk with us out on the sideline. We'd just BS.
Well, we would be so we go out.
You'd be in the way.
We do our whole pregame routine, and then we would shift around the field as more groups started to come out. And it wasn't 90 minutes for everybody. Like, there were a couple people who came out like very close to an hour before game time was when they came out padded. But everybody was out there, I think, by like 58 minutes, 58 or 60 on the clock is when the entire rest of the team would come out. And that's when we would start our stretch. We'd huddle down by the thing. We'd break out and run to our stretch lines on both sides of the field, cross field jog, start into our stuff. And then we would get done with that at like 42 minutes, 45 minutes. And the specialists were done. We had warmed up for 40 minutes and then we were done. The game doesn't start for another 45 minutes. We have to just warm up again. It's the dumbest shit I've ever. And now that I even replay the time frames in my head, it makes me even more mad. It's so stupid. Unreal. Any other travel considerations? The boys go on the road for the first time. They've been at home three days in a row here, or 3 weeks in a row, and now they have to go on the road. It's a night game. What are considerations there? Because there's a little bit of central nervous system. Like, hey, we got to keep things low here. Is there as you said, you get to the hotel, they'll probably leave at like 1, get there at like 2, they might leave at like 2, get there at like 3:30, 4, first special teams meetings at like 5, dinner 6. They start electrolyte loading, especially early in the season here when they're sweating a ton. It's like electrolytes at that moment, not that you're a nutritionist, but the strength conditioning, they obviously do a ton with the nutrition. You guys are just immediately on top of the guys, like, hey, calories, electrolytes, fluids. It's just all the way to game day the next day for basically 24 hours. You're just on them, right?
Yeah. And so they're going to get to the, I mean, it's going to be, Minnesota is a good road game because yeah. You're so close with, it's like you're up and then you're down. The hotel was nice. The hotel stadium was nice. The stadium is nice too. So as a visitor, there's tons of room. And like, that is an implication that you think about as the strength coach, how tight are the guys going to be? So you're going to have room. You're going to be able to relax. It's a good stadium. It's a good turf. And like, those are things that go into play. The big thing that you're always kind of cognizant of is how well did they sleep? You want them to sleep well because your nervous system, when you sleep somewhere new, there's tons of research on it, but the reason people don't sleep well the first night somewhere new is it's that that innate thing in us as humans is like, hey, this is a new environment. Where are my threats? I don't feel safe. This isn't my home. And it's hard to shut that off in your subconscious. So trying to get your athletes to feel comfortable, feel like, hey, this is home. Giving them simple tricks like, you know, having the room be cold, making sure that the room is dark, taking a hot shower before bed, like things of that nature, like your sleep checklist. So that way you're recovered for the next day.
My ancestral genetics must not have been one of warrior bloodline because I slept so goddamn good before games. Hotel beds, those just like cold sheets, those just a perfect bed, you know, you can, those blackout curtains in hotels are just so dark. You turn the room down to 32 degrees and you just ice yourself out. I slept so good, but early on for the young guys, especially, kind of wrap it up here. The young guys who are like worried they're going to miss breakfast.
Yes, or any meeting because you're like, where's this room? Like, that's a legitimate concern too. Like, you kind of tell them, hey, okay, this is where the meeting room is.
Yep.
Understand how many elevators there are because maybe it's full and where the like, you do have to educate them on that because it's like.
There is some procedural anxiety that goes on at a new place. How long does it take to walk from the room? You know, we, at fucking Purdue, we were...
Oh, the Purdue is so
long. I mean, we had to walk like 12 minutes to get to the meeting room. It's like, okay, you think you're good if you leave, you know, you want to be at the meeting 5 minutes early at least, probably closer to 10. So you leave 15 minutes early from your room. But if you're at Purdue, you got to leave like a half hour early because it's a walk. You're in a motel.
Remember that old locker room at Purdue too? That was terrible.
Horrible. So it's just like... Yeah, when you're young, you're worried the alarm's not going to go off. You're going to miss breakfast. You might sleep not quite as good. It's a whole thing. A lot to consider, but you're right. Minnesota is a good place to travel. Great opposing locker room. Great space on the sidelines. There's a lot going for them. I think it's going to be a juiced environment because they want to keep that pig, and we don't have the pig, and we're trying to fill a trophy case, which brings it around to where we started this podcast off. 5-10-5 show, another week. With Coach Justin Lima, thank you guys for listening. Hopefully the Hawks can bring back the pig tomorrow, and we will talk to you guys on the recap episode on Monday. We'll see you then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.